Page 131. Starting Chapter 19. The Children Sold. The doctor came back from New York, of course, without accomplishing his purpose. He had expended considerable money and was rather disheartened. My brother and the children had now been in jail 2 months, and that also was some expense. My friends thought it was a favorable time to work on his discouraged feelings. Mr. Sands sent a speculator to offer him $900 for my brother William and $800 for the two children. These were high prices, as slaves were then selling, but the offer was rejected. If it had been merely a question of money, the doctor would have sold any boy of Benny's age for $200, but he could not bear to give up the power of revenge. But he was hard-pressed for money, and he revolved the matter in his mind. He knew that if he could keep Ellen till she was 15, he could sell her for a high price, but I presume he reflected that she might die or might be stolen away. At all events, he came to the conclusion that he had better accept the slave trader's offer. Meeting him in the street, he inquired when he would leave town. "Today, at 10 o'clock," he replied. "Ah, do you go so soon?" said the doctor. "I have been reflecting upon your proposition, and I have concluded to let you have the three negroes if you will say $1,900." After some parley, the trader agreed to his terms. He wanted the bill of sale drawn up and signed immediately, as he had a great deal to attend to during the short time he remained in town. The doctor went to the jail and told William he would take him back into his service if he would promise to behave himself, but he replied that he would rather be sold. "And you shall be sold, you ungrateful rascal," exclaimed the doctor. In less than an hour, the money was paid, the papers were signed, sealed, and delivered, and my brother and children were in the hands of the trader. Page 132. It was a hurried transaction, and after it was over, the doctor's characteristic caution returned. He went back to the speculator and said, "Sir, I have come to lay you under obligations of $1,000 not to sell any of those negroes in this state." "You come too late," replied the trader. "Our bargain is closed." He had, in fact, already sold them to Mr. Sands, but he did not mention it. The doctor required him to put irons on that rascal, Bill, and to pass through the back streets when he took his gang out of town. The trader was privately instructed to concede to his wishes. My good old aunt went to the jail to bid the children goodbye, supposing them to be the speculator's property and that she should never see them again. As she held Benny in her lap, he said, "Aunt Nancy, I want to show you something." He led her to the door and showed her a long row of marks, saying, "Uncle Will taught me to count. I have made a mark for every day I have been here, and it is 60 days. It is a long time, and the speculator is going to take me and Ellen away. He's a bad man. It's wrong for him to take grandmother's children. I want to go to my mother." My grandmother was told that the children would be restored to her, but she was requested to act as if they were really to be sent away. Accordingly, she made up a bundle of clothes and went to the jail. When she arrived, she found William handcuffed among the gang and the children in the trader's cart. The scene seemed too much like reality. She was afraid there might have been some deception or mistake. She fainted and was carried home. When the wagon stopped at the hotel, several gentlemen came out and proposed to purchase William, but the trader refused their offers without stating that he was already sold. And now came the trying hour for that drove of human beings, driven away like cattle, to be sold they knew not where. Husbands were torn from wives, parents from children, never to look upon each other again, this side the grave. There was wringing of hands and cries of despair. Page 133. Dr. Flint had the supreme satisfaction of seeing the wagon leave town, and Mrs. Flint had the gratification of supposing that my children were going as far as wind and water would carry them. According to agreement, my uncle followed the wagon some miles until they came to an old farmhouse. There the trader took the irons from William, and as he did so, he said, "You are a damned clever fellow. I should like to own you myself. Them gentlemen that wanted to buy you said you was a bright, honest chap, and I must get you a good home. I guess your old master will swear tomorrow and call himself an old fool for selling the children. I reckon he'll never get their mammy back again. I expect she's made tracks for the north. Goodbye, old boy. Remember, I have done you a good turn. You must thank me by coaxing all the pretty gals to go with me next fall. That's going to be my last trip. This trading in niggers is a bad business for a fellow that's got any heart. Move on, you fellows." And the gang went on, God alone knows where. Much as I despise and detest the class of slave traders, whom I regard as the vilest wretches on earth, I must do this man the justice to say that he seemed to have some feeling. He took a fancy to William in the jail and wanted to buy him. When he heard the story of my children, he was willing to aid them in getting out of Dr. Flint's power, even without charging the customary fee. My uncle procured a wagon and carried William and the children back to town. Great was the joy in my grandmother's house. The curtains were closed and the candles lighted. The happy grandmother cuddled the little ones to her bosom. They hugged her and kissed her and clapped their hands and shouted. She knelt down and poured forth one of her heartfelt prayers of thanksgiving to God. The father was present for a while, and though such a parental relation as existed between him and my children takes slight hold on the hearts or consciences of slaveholders, it must be that he experienced some moments of pure joy in witnessing the happiness he had imparted. I had no share in the rejoicings of that evening. The events of the day had not come to my knowledge. And now I will tell you something that happened to me, though you will perhaps think it illustrates the superstition of slaves. Page 134. I sat in my usual place on the floor near the window, where I could hear much that was said in the street without being seen. The family had retired for the night, and all was still. I sat there thinking of my children when I heard a low strain of music. A band of serenaders were under the window playing Home Sweet Home. I listened till the sounds did not seem like music, but like the moaning of children. It seemed as if my heart would burst. I rose from my sitting posture and knelt. A streak of moonlight was on the floor before me, and in the midst of it appeared the forms of my two children. They vanished, but I had seen them distinctly. Some will call it a dream, others a vision. I know not how to account for it, but it made a strong impression on my mind, and I felt certain something had happened to my little ones. I had not seen Betty since morning. Now I heard her softly turning the key. As soon as she entered, I clung to her and begged her to let me know whether my children were dead or whether they were sold, for I had seen their spirits in my room, and I was sure something had happened to them. "Lor, child," said she, putting her arms round me, "you's got de hysterics. I'll sleep with you tonight, 'cause you'll make a noise and ruin missus. Something has stirred you up mightily. When you is done crying, I'll talk with you. De children is well and mighty happy. I seed 'em myself. Does dat satisfy you? Dar, child, be still. Somebody will hear you." I tried to obey her. She lay down and was soon sound asleep, but no sleep would come to my eyelids. At dawn, Betty was up and off to the kitchen. The hours passed on, and the vision of the night kept constantly recurring to my thoughts. After a while, I heard the voices of two women in the entry. In one of them, I recognized the housemaid. The other said to her, "Did you know Linda Brent's children was sold to the speculator yesterday? They say old Massa Flint was mighty glad to see him drove out of town, but they say they've come back again. I expect it's all their daddy's doings. They say he's bought William, too. Lor, how it will take hold of old Massa Flint. I'm going round to Aunt Marthy's to see about it." Page 135. I bit my lips till the blood came to keep from crying out. Were my children with their grandmother, or had the speculator carried them off? The suspense was dreadful. Would Betty never come and tell me the truth about it? At last she came, and I eagerly repeated what I had overheard. Her face was one broad, bright smile. "Lor, you foolish ting," said she. "I's gwine to tell you all about it. De gals is eating their breakfast, and missus told me to let her tell you. But poor creetur, 'tain't right to keep you waiting, and I's gwine to tell you. Brudder, chillen, all is bought by de daddy. I's laughed more than enough, thinking about old Massa Flint. Lord, how he will swar. He's got catched dis time, anyhow, but I must be getting out of dis, or dem gals will come and catch me." Betty went off laughing, and I said to myself, "Can it be true that my children are free? I have not suffered for them in vain. Thank God." Great surprise was expressed when it was known that my children had returned to their grandmother's. The news spread through the town, and many a kind word was bestowed on the little ones. Dr. Flint went to my grandmother's to ascertain who was the owner of my children, and she informed him. "I expected as much," said he. "I am glad to hear it. I have had news from Linda lately, and I shall soon have her. You need never expect to see her free. She shall be my slave as long as I live, and when I am dead she shall be the slave of my children. If I ever find out that you or Philip had anything to do with her running off, I'll kill him. and if I meet William in the street and he presumes to look at me, I'll flog him within an inch of his life. Keep those brats out of my sight." As he turned to leave, my grandmother said something to remind him of his own doings. He looked back upon her as if he would have been glad to strike her to the ground. I had my season of joy and thanksgiving. It was the first time since my childhood that I had experienced any real happiness. I heard of the old doctor's threats, but they no longer had the same power to trouble me. Page 136. The darkest cloud that hung over my life had rolled away. Whatever slavery might do to me, it could not shackle my children. If I fell a sacrifice, my little ones were saved. It was well for me that my simple heart believed all that had been promised for their welfare. It is always better to trust than to doubt. Page 137. Starting Chapter 20, New Perils. The doctor, more exasperated than ever, again tried to revenge himself on my relatives. He arrested Uncle Philip on the charge of having aided my flight. He was carried before a court and swore truly that he knew nothing of my intention to escape, and that he had not seen me since I left my master's plantation. The doctor then demanded that he should give bail for $500, that he would have nothing to do with me. Several gentlemen offered to be security for him, but Mr. Sands told him he had better go back to jail, and he would see that he came out without giving bail. The news of his arrest was carried to my grandmother, who conveyed it to Betty. In the kindness of her heart, she again stowed me away under the floor, and as she walked back and forth in the performance of her culinary duties, she talked apparently to herself, but with the intention that I should hear what was going on. I hoped that my uncle's imprisonment would last but few days. Still, I was anxious. I thought it was likely Dr. Flint would do his utmost to taunt and insult him, and I was afraid my uncle might lose control of himself and retort in some way that would be construed into a punishable offense. And I was well aware that in court his word would not be taken against any white man's. The search for me was renewed. Something had excited suspicions that I was in the vicinity. They searched the house I was in. I heard their steps and their voices. At night, when all were asleep, Betty came to release me from my place of confinement. The fright I had undergone, the constrained posture, and the dampness of the ground made me ill for several days. Page 138. My uncle was soon after taken out of prison, but the movements of all my relatives and all our friends were very closely watched. We all saw that I could not remain where I was much longer. I had already stayed longer than was intended, and I knew my presence must be a source of perpetual anxiety to my kind benefactress. During this time, my friends had laid many plans for my escape, but the extreme vigilance of my persecutors made it impossible to carry them into effect. One morning I was much startled by hearing somebody trying to get into my room. Several keys were tried, but none fitted. I instantly conjectured it was one of the housemaids, and I concluded she must either have heard some noise in the room or have noticed the entrance of Betty. When my friend came at her usual time, I told her what had happened. "I knows who it was," says she. "Pend upon it, 'twas that Jenny. That nigger always got de debil in her." I suggested that she might have seen or heard something that excited her curiosity. "Tut, tut, child," exclaimed Betty. "She ain't seen nothin' or heard nothin'. She only specs something, that's all. She wants to find out who hab cut and make my gown. But she won't never know, that's sartin. I'll get missus to fix her." I reflected a moment and said, "Betty, I must leave here tonight." "Do as you tink best, poor child," she replied. "I's mighty afraid dat ere nigger will pop on you sometime." She reported the incident to her mistress and received orders to keep Jenny busy in the kitchen till she could see my Uncle Philip. He told her he would send a friend for me that very evening. She told him she hoped I was going to the north, for it was very dangerous for me to remain anywhere in the vicinity. Alas, it was not an easy thing for one in my situation to go to the north. In order to leave the coast quite clear for me, she went into the country to spend the day with her brother and took Jenny with her. She was afraid to come and bid me good-bye, but she left a kind message with Betty. I heard her carriage roll from the door, and I never again saw her who had so generously befriended the poor, trembling fugitive. Though she was a slaveholder, to this day my heart blesses her. Page 139. I had not the slightest idea where I was going. Betty brought me a suit of sailor's clothes, jacket, trousers, and tarpaulin hat. She gave me a small bundle, saying I might need it where I was going. In cheery tones, she exclaimed, "I'se so glad you was gwine to Free Parts. Don't forget old